I am speaking to you at a moment of grave crisis.
I'm Jeff Turner, and this is Recall. It's a series about history. Not the ancient past, but history that's still hot to the touch. In this first season, I explore a revolutionary political movement that brought a modern democracy to the brink. You can find Recall, How to Start a Revolution, on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brian Goldman. Welcome to The Dose. I recall 2 decades ago when studies discovered a link between the health of your gums and your heart, and that led some dentists to say, floss or die. That may be an exaggeration, but trust me, your teeth don't just help you chew food. They're surprisingly important for your general health, and so is your oral health in general. With all the talk about publicly funded dental care, maybe the federal government knows something you should know too. So this week we are asking, how does the health of my mouth affect my overall health? Hi, Heather. Welcome to The Dose.
Hi, I'm so pleased to be with you.
So what's your first thought when you hear the phrase floss or die?
Well, in its most extreme circumstance, it may be true, but I just think it might be, slightly exaggerated. However, it gets attention, and it just is an indicator that your oral health is part of your overall health.
Which is why we have come to you as an expert to help us on this very important subject. But before we begin, can you give us a hi, my name is, tell us what you do and where you do it.
I'm Dr. Heather Carr. I'm the current president of the Canadian Dental Association, and I'm a practicing general dentist in Halifax for almost 36 years.
What are some of the tangible benefits of taking care of your oral health?
It's interesting. Just back a few weeks ago, it was World Oral Health Day, and the theme was actually healthy mouth, healthy body. So a healthy mouth, speaking, smiling, allows you to smell and taste properly. You can chew without pain if your mouth is healthy. You can swallow properly. It allows you to convey emotion and improve your self-esteem. You're able to smile and talk without being self-conscious. So it's very important, and such an easy prevention is so easy for a healthy mouth.
And what are some of the specific health benefits that we know from evidence that come from taking care of oral health?
One that's most common is diabetes. I quite often in my patient family will see diabetics, and if they're uncontrolled, they often have a lot more problems with gum disease. And on rare occasions too, I've been able to recommend they go see their medical doctor, because I've got somebody who's been in relatively good oral health and all of a sudden has a lot of gum disease, a lot of swelling, bleeding. And so that's a very important link, and a very similar link we find sometimes with our HIV patients. They have a lot of issues with their gums and gum disease.
So it's actually a marker for you. So if you see somebody with a lot of gum disease, if you know they've got other risk factors, you're thinking diabetes.
I certainly want them to rule it out. And it's more if you get something unusual, or somebody comes into me new and they seem to have more gum disease than I would anticipate for their age and other issues in their health. You know, there's other things we diagnose at times, or at least send to a specialist: oral cancer, sores in your mouth that don't heal for a couple weeks. Quite often these individuals have other risk factors for health, such as tobacco use or excess alcohol. And the other thing with cancer of any sort is the impact of chemotherapy and sometimes radiation on your oral health. Quite often we recommend, if a patient knows they have to undergo chemo, that they come in and see their dentist first, because it's very limited treatment we can do when their immune system is suppressed. And in other cases, depending on where the radiation field is, it can impact their salivary glands and make their mouth dry and have other issues.
Let's talk about some of the problems that can occur if people aren't taking good care of their teeth. What problems, for instance, can mouth bacteria cause?
Well, the most common ones in my chair, in the dental chair, is tooth decay. It's a disease. It's probably one of the most common diseases that we have, and it is very preventable. We see, as I've mentioned already, we see gum disease, we see oral cancer. There's just so much of it too. The reason that it's so important to have a healthy diet, avoid the sugar, make sure you're coming in for your checkups, have your cleanings done. So much of it can be prevented if you're having regular care for your teeth.
And of course, the bacteria inside the mouth can cause dental abscesses. And sometimes the bacteria can get into the bloodstream and to the heart valves and the lungs, can't they?
It's interesting because with the things that we know that are dental disease impact in our overall body, it's a mirror to what may occur. But it's a two-way street because there's so many factors involved. But definitely, we certainly, in the most serious cases, if bacteria gets in the bloodstream, individuals get bacterial endocarditis. Now, it is rare, thankfully, but if you have certain valve issues in your heart, other conditions, you'd be more prone to that. And there's certainly indications that it can increase the risk of pneumonia. And we've also seen some studies that are showing low birth weight or preterm babies with individuals with gum disease.
What are the dental procedures that are most likely to cause bacteria in your mouth around your teeth to leak out into the bloodstream?
If your gums and teeth are healthy, you have very low risk. But if you're somebody who has a lot of gum disease, or we call it periodontal disease, with a lot of buildup, when you're having those cleanings, if you haven't had one after several years, you certainly could introduce it. And occasionally, if you're having difficult fillings and more often extractions, those are the times that people have to be aware.
You know, certainly I recall dimly from my medical school days that there are heart valves that are particularly at risk. And they're the ones for which you need to take antibiotics before you have a dental procedure. What are the heart valves that you're most concerned about as a dentist that you want to make sure your patients are taking antibiotics?
It does get updated, and there is a list of conditions that we use the antibiotics pre-medication for. One that might surprise people outside the heart is we have some patients coming in who've had joint replacements, and they anticipate they should have antibiotics before they have dental procedures. And in many cases, they don't need it if they're overall in good health. So there's a very, very, you know, succinct list, and we try to follow that as carefully as we can. And it's been updated not too long ago.
What role does saliva play in keeping our mouths healthy?
Oh, it's critical. Medications as we get older and certain autoimmune conditions can dry individuals' mouths, and we tend to see more cavities because your saliva bathes your teeth and it helps keep things, you know, moving and cleaner. So if you have a dry mouth, you're much more prone to having gum disease and cavities. So if you're on a medication, I always suggest to people, if you have a dry mouth from a medication, you have to take it. Just be a water carrier. Always have water, you know, to substitute it. And there are salivary substitutes that you can buy in local pharmacies as well that are effective for some individuals.
You know, certainly I know that whenever I see my dentist, my dental professional, I'm asked each time, what medications are you on? Are you on the same medications? What are the medications that you're most concerned about that would decrease the flow of saliva? I know certainly the technical term would be anticholinergic medications. So certain kinds of antidepressants, antihistamines, for instance. What are the medications that concern you the most?
Probably a big one that I see is furosemide, or what people call, I have a fluid pill.
Water pills, diuretics.
Yes. Yeah, so that's a big one. The other thing, even aside from medications, is menopause can quite often lead to a drier mouth. So that's another side effect that individuals do have to deal with sometimes. And I'm very careful, if people are on certain oral chemotherapy agents or radiation, that can also dry out your mouth.
In the emergency department, I see patients all the time who have toothaches. We have dental residents who are available, which is a really good thing to have. But sometimes at night when they're not around, I've had patients who come in who ask me to pull a tooth, which I don't do.
Okay.
Why is that a bad idea in general? When people ask for teeth to be removed, it's a bad idea to actually remove it.
You know, there is, and once again, we are talking, there's multiple risk factors, but there's certainly a correlation or relationship between loss of teeth and actually a shorter life expectancy. There's multiple factors. Just practically speaking, if you lose teeth, it causes difficulties when you chew your food. And individuals who lose all their teeth and either wear full dentures or have no dentures can quite often have poor nutrition if they have difficulty navigating them, especially in later years in their life. So when it's possible and when it's reasonable, it's much better to maintain your teeth.
You know, it kind of reminds me that dental implants are not a should not be a luxury item. What role do you think dental implants might play in helping stave off some of these problems that come from losing teeth?
It's interesting because I mentioned earlier, I've been out for about 36 years and there's been a lot of advances. And I think dental implants are one of the greatest advances. And as you say, there is definitely a cost involved. But if you can replace a tooth with an implant, and you have to be in good health, you know, we mentioned the diabetic. So if you're an uncontrolled diabetic, you may not be able to get an implant or you have other health issues. But if you can possibly are in a position to replace a missing tooth with an implant, it's a game changer in the dental world. And as well as helping you chew, it also maintains the position of your other teeth and helps protect them a little bit. So it is, I agree with you, it is a wonderful and positive addition in the dental world.
You've mentioned chemotherapy for cancer treatment, and that can have an impact on oral health. Are there other conditions that you're particularly concerned about when you're treating patients in your practice?
Absolutely. Well, we did mention that there's autoimmune disorders such as Sjögren's syndrome, which causes dry mouth as well as having other, you know, impacts on your overall health. And if you think about something like eating disorders, for example, bulimia, quite often if somebody has a severe case, even if they don't self-disclose, we will see it. Their teeth erode. They have significant wear on the insides of their teeth. Their gums are irritated. Bad breath, which is not pleasant. There's different issues, but those are two that come to my mind right off the top of my head.
That's interesting. Like, you know, of course, everybody's wearing masks, so it's very hard to smell the odor of somebody's breath. But if somebody does have halitosis, has bad breath, are you using that as a clue to figure out what other diseases they might have?
Well, it kind of depends. And I mean, you're right. I have a mask too. So when I'm dealing with the patients, but I go by their descriptors. But there's certain, if your mouth is dry, that definitely can cause halitosis. I mentioned menopause sometimes contributes to it. Any of the medications that contribute to the dry mouth and not having regular cleanings and not cleaning your teeth properly yourself with that. It's funny, it's back to the basics, floss, brush, you know, get your teeth cleaned, because if you haven't had a cleaning and you tend to get a lot of buildup in your teeth, that definitely can create the halitosis as well. And sort of in a more extreme, you would be more aware of this as a physician, but certainly diabetes, if there's a ketone breath, that would be more extreme. It's not very often I've run into that in my career.
Amina is an activist during the Arab Spring. Her blog, Gay Girl in Damascus, attracts readers from around the world. When she's mysteriously abducted, her followers mobilize, desperate to save her. What they find shocks them. I'm Samira Moyeddin, the host of Gay Girl Gone, a new 6-part series from CBC. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You mentioned radiation. I want you to elaborate on that. What does radiation do to the mouth that might affect oral health?
In the case of the radiation, the biggest side effect will occur if the field of radiation involves the head and neck, because if it impacts some of your salivary glands, so we just talked about how important saliva is, and dries your mouth out. And also if, you know, it tires people. And so if you're tired and you're not feeling well, then your oral hygiene, you know, the things that you do to keep healthy may be set aside for a while. And it doesn't mean they go away. They just are there as time passes.
You've got everybody's attention right now. What are the best ways that we can protect our oral health?
We have risk factors which overlap with overall health, which is why we're talking about this today. You know, you have a healthy diet, minimize your sugar intake. That's going to help tooth decay. If you avoid tobacco products and excess alcohol, the tobacco products are related to oral cancer, and it also can be drying to your mouth. And certainly excess alcohol will dry your mouth and is a risk factor for oral cancer. It's so much prevention. If you can get in to your dentist or dental hygienist regularly for cleaning and have the dentist check your teeth so that you can catch things early. And if you're also able to, I still recommend that people try to drink fluoridated water, because it is a great public health measure which had positive impacts on the rate of decay or cavities.
Does fluoridated water help older people, or is that something that's mainly of value when you're just starting out in life?
That's an interesting question, and I don't have the detailed study on hand that would prove it one way or the other. I certainly think it's a positive. We do find as individuals get older, we tend to use fluoride varnish because when we get older, our roots are exposed, and those roots are much more prone to cavities. So I use that as a treatment in many of my older patients who have to deal with that to decrease the amount of decay they have. So it's valuable and in sometimes in different way, but I certainly, there'd be no harm in having fluoridated water all throughout your life. It would be a positive for your dental health.
I read an article very recently that suggested that there's little evidence that twice yearly dental appointments are necessary. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that. How frequently do we need to see a dentist in order to maintain our oral health?
I think that is different for every single individual. Some people are fine once a year. Other people I see every 2 to 3 months. We were just talking about elderly patients or older patients who have root exposure and very young children with a high rate of cavities. I'll see them every 2 or 3 months to give them fluoride varnish. There's other individuals who, if they have, say, diabetes and they have a lot of gum disease, that they need to have cleanings, at least cleanings, if not assessments, every 3 to 4 months. You know, you have to look at the individual. And what can happen is, say, I'll have somebody come in as a new patient. They'll have a lot of gum disease, a lot of buildup. They haven't had regular care. I'll bring them back in 3 or 4 months and we'll reassess. Maybe at that time, they can move out to a 6-month checkup. I think the 6 months is just a reasonable average for most individuals. But I really think you need to talk to your dentist about what is right for you.
Heather, I want to spend a couple of moments talking about geriatric dentistry. We have, of course, an aging population. We have more and more people who have dementia. Can you talk about some of the particular challenges of treating frail seniors, perhaps with or without dementia, and how that affects the work that you do?
I always say that a patient with a special need is just another patient because we all have special needs of some sort. But you are right, there is challenges. In many cases, it depends on how much help they get with home care. If you have a caregiver, especially in end stages of some of these diseases, such as Parkinson's or dementia, it makes it much better. You know, if there's somebody who can get you into the dentist or provide the care you need daily, that's critical. But you have to be patient and caring. And if you've got an established relationship, I find it helps because I certainly, over my 36 years, my patients are aging with me. And some of them are older than me to start. And they're some of my favorite patients to see, but they certainly struggle as they get older. And there's ways around manual dexterity, even if you're trying to care for yourself. And it's sad that as individuals get older, they may have had dental benefits and lose them, or their income's limited. And then I don't get to see them as often. The time in your life when you need the most care and you need the most help is when I stop to see them as regularly. And then we're dealing with something that's very challenging. It is a difficult situation. And I know that it takes a lot of special care, but it's well worth it.
You mentioned having a companion. When people have dementia, one of the things they may stop doing is taking care of their teeth.
Yes.
And when that happens, I assume that trouble follows.
Absolutely. And these are individuals who, under normal circumstances, for years and years, would be impeccable about oral hygiene. And in some cases, there's physical limitations which prevent it if a person has a stroke or has other issues like that. So when you talk about how often do I need to see patients, those are the types of patients I need to see more often. I have an individual who is a quadriplegic and in a motorized wheelchair. And, you know, I see her every 2 to 3 months and we're basically brushing her teeth. You know, some brushing is getting done in between, but, you know, they need that frequent care so that we can keep them from losing teeth or having pain.
So what do you do for somebody like that?
The very best we can. The person I'm thinking of lives on their own in a group home. So they had their mother for many years who probably was very diligent. But you talk to the caregivers, you give them instructions and really just try to get them in as frequently as possible. Do a thorough cleaning. This person also has a tendency to snap her mouth shut. So it's a challenging day sometimes. But, you know, we just do our very best and find strategies. Each day is a success because if we can get that plaque off her teeth and keep her teeth healthy and then put some varnish on them to keep the bacteria at bay and repeat it as often as possible.
Finally, Heather, we don't usually get political on the show, but in this case, we'll make an exception for people who don't have access to a dentist. How much are you hoping that the new federal dental care plan can help people?
As part of the Canadian Dental Association, you know, we've been advocating for access to care for these individuals for years. And so I'm very excited that the CDCP will hopefully provide access. There are some concerns because it has to be done right. You know, we have to make sure that the patients are treated well, because if this is really a once in a lifetime opportunity, this investment. There are several elements in this plan that have raised concerns amongst the dental profession, and we're still waiting for details, believe it or not, even though it's supposed to start in May. So I'm cautiously optimistic. The Ministry of Health has had several conversations with us, and we're hoping that we'll be able to move forward and get these patients the care they need. You know, we're lucky in Canada in that 2/3 of Canadians get good care, primarily through dental insurance and self-funding. But we really need to help these 1/3 that don't have access to care to make sure that they have the good oral health that they deserve.
Well, let's hope the government is listening to professionals like you. Dr. Heather Carr, thank you for speaking to us on The Dose.
Always happy to talk about an important topic like this. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Heather Carr is the president of the Canadian Dental Association and a general dentist who's been practicing in Halifax for 35 years. Here's your dose of smart advice. Oral health has a direct bearing on your overall health. The mouth contains lots of bacteria and other germs. Tooth decay and gum disease can cause infections in the mouth, which can spread to other parts of the body. Poor oral health is linked to heart disease, stroke, and pneumonia. In pregnant women, gum or gingival inflammation and infection has been linked to premature birth and low birth weight. There's a strong connection between diabetes and oral health. Gum disease is more prevalent in people who have diabetes. Diabetes leaves the body less able to fight infection and can put the gums at risk. Likewise, people who have gum disease have a harder time controlling their blood sugar levels. Regular dental care can improve diabetes control. HIV/AIDS can lower the body's ability to fight infection and make oral health problems worse. Germs inside the oral cavity are a frequent cause of endocarditis, which is an infection of the inner lining of the heart valves. Gum disease has also been linked to cancers of the mouth, gastrointestinal tract, lung, breast, prostate, and uterus. Saliva is important for good oral and general health. Medications that lower the flow of saliva and increase risk include decongestants, antihistamines, pain relievers, water pills or diuretics, and antidepressants. To protect your oral health, take care of your mouth every day. Brush your teeth at least twice a day for 2 minutes each time. Brush your tongue as well. Replace your toothbrush every 3 to 4 months or sooner if bristles are worn or flare out. Clean between your teeth daily with floss and other products your dentist can tell you about. Eat a healthy diet and limit sugary foods and drinks. Don't use tobacco and drink alcohol moderately. See your dentist at least once a year for checkups and cleanings. Make sure your dentist knows the other diseases you have and the medications you take. See your dentist right away if you get pain or bleeding inside the mouth or if you have ulcers and sores that don't heal quickly. As dementia gets worse, people tend to neglect their oral health. Those with Parkinson's disease and other conditions that affect mobility may find it difficult to take care of their teeth. For them, paying special attention to sugar intake and more frequent visits to their dental practitioner may be necessary. If you have topics you'd like discussed or questions answered, our email address is thedose@cbc.ca. If you like this episode, please give us a rating and review wherever you listen. This edition of The Dose was produced by Samir Chabra and Isabel Gallant. Our senior producer is Colleen Ross. The Dose wants you to be better informed about your health. If you're looking for medical advice, see your healthcare provider. I'm Dr. Brian Goldman. Until your next dose.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.